Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill and Brandon Maslin, only on LA Talk Radio.
Well, hello, everyone, and thank you so much for tuning in to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill and Brandon Maslin. We are so happy to have you here during this holiday season or whenever you might be tuning in to be here with us. Before we get started with today's show and introduce you to our incredible guest, I'd like to take a moment to thank our sponsors. Marcum Search offers premier professional recruiting services throughout the United States, including temporary payroll services, contingency payroll, and executive search. So please feel free to keep them in mind for all of your potential recruitment needs. Now today, before we begin, let me go ahead and take a look at our guest bio here so I can tell you a little bit about him. Nate and I were recently connected and introduced via a mutual friend, Jules Harrison, and she just raved about Nate and the work that he was doing. I said, okay, great. Nate, we got to find time to have you on the show because it sounds like you have a lot of wisdom to share. Nate Regier, PhD, is the CEO and co-founder of Next Element, a global training advisory firm specializing in leadership, communication, and building cultures of compassionate accountability. He is a former practicing psychologist and holds a doctorate in clinical psychology from the University of Kansas. Thank you so much for being here with us, Nate.
Well, it's great to be here, Brandon and Jennifer. Good to be with you today. Talk about compassion.
Yes, I think that the topic is very apropos. As we were discussing before we went on air, I just had a friend of mine pass away very unexpectedly on Friday. We still don't know what happened. And she was a business colleague, somebody I'd known for 15 years, but so much more than that. And I thought, how timely is this topic, Nate? Because I don't know what to do. You know, I'd be curious to know your thoughts, Brandon. Like, how can we all as human beings be compassionate? How can we be compassionate leaders? And how can we lead when our heart is aching and breaking and be compassionate towards ourselves and the people that we're leading? What are your thoughts, Nate?
Well, Jennifer, first, I just want to say I'm sorry for your loss and how hard that is. And just that you're just willing to share that and put that out there. I think compassion starts with the willingness to simply be with somebody in the suffering. Mm-hmm. And so often I think we misunderstand compassion as, oh, my heart goes out to you. I want to go fix it. I want to alleviate your suffering. I want to give you this, or I want to give to this cause because, you know, I want to make a difference in the world. But what if it all just starts with just simply being able to say, I'm here with you now. And the word compassion means with suffering, not take it away or suffer instead of, just means be with people in the struggle, because life is messy. Life is hard and crap happens. And I think the most important thing we want to know is, were you just going to be with me during this?
Yeah, it's so beautiful. I mean, that's how I felt today talking to one of the family members, is you feel at a loss. I mean, you of course say, yes, I'm here. What do you need? How can I be with you? But more importantly, not just asking how I can be there with you, just allowing yourself to be there without trying to fix it. I think our default as human beings, and sometimes as leaders, it's easy being a leader just to try and direct and fix and shove something in a hole and be like, okay, this goes here. So now I can compartmentalize this and get forward with it. But then the person sometimes feels left feeling like a thing rather than a human being.
Mm-hmm. Well, feelings, I think again, compassion says your feelings are not wrong or right. They're not something to be fixed or taken away, because if I'm experiencing something, how often do I feel like maybe I'm the only one that's ever been through this, or nobody can really understand what I'm dealing with? And that's a really lonely, scary place to be. So if someone comes along and tries to make it better, it's as if they're discounting again the thing that I'm experiencing. And so I think simply validating and valuing the experience itself is so important that we're with while we're struggling and suffering.
I think that's a beautiful point you made there, Nate, because I do think it's been a year of suffering, and my heart does go out to you, Jennifer, because this has already been a traumatic year in so many ways, and then for you to have to add suffering, I truly am sorry, my dear friend. And one thing I love about you is that your love for the people you care about is you know, fills the universe quite literally. So my sincere heartfelt thoughts. I love, Nate, too, that you talked about the not making it better. That was certainly when I lost my mother suddenly and tragically as well. It was, that was the best advice I got was suffer, feel the pain, just feel it and own it. And it's something that I've taken into my coaching. When someone leaves a job or loses someone or anything, you know, I always say the most important thing to do, no matter what, is to feel. And I love that you talked about that. Can you actually, just always something that I love to talk, to think about as we get into the subject of compassion, what Jennifer's going, not to use Jennifer as an example, but how do you, what's the difference between compassion for someone and having empathy for someone?
Ah, great question. Great question. Because for a lot of people, that is compassion, is simply empathy. And humans, we are endowed with this amazing capability to feel pain with other people. And there's actually neurons in the brain called mirror neurons. That's what they do. They pick up and sense it. You know, I sometimes wish I had more. I think my wife would like if I had more of those neurons. But we all have the ability to do that. We've identified that there are actually three core competencies for compassion. And one of them is openness. And of openness, there's three strategies. And one of them is empathy. So to answer your question, empathy is one of nine strategies to practice compassion, but it's just one. And sometimes it's just the right thing. And sometimes it's the impetus for the next thing. And sometimes it's absolutely not the thing people need.
So how that, okay, my little radar is going off over here. What are the other eight?
Sure, absolutely. So openness is the first skill of compassion. We always start with openness, and that's about creating a transparent, safe space where our experiences are valued and our emotions are valued. And that's what we were talking about to open the show today. Empathy is one way where I feel with you and I somehow can connect and relate and say, man, I remember losing a friend, or I remember when my father died. I do, Brandon, too. When you're sharing your story, I thought, man, I can remember. But it's not like I understand you. I'm not going through what you're going through, but I went through something where I can say I'm feeling with you. And I think empathy is about saying you are not alone in what you're experiencing. But there's two other strategies of openness. And one of them is called disclosure, where I share how I'm feeling. Because someone has to start this and say, I'm suffering, I'm struggling, I'm in pain. How can we empathize if we don't, how can we struggle with you if we don't know what you're struggling with? So disclosure is another strategy. And then the third one is called validate. And that's where we really affirm that another person's feelings are valid. So maybe you shared with me, Jennifer, I'm really distracted because I'm thinking about this. And I say, you know what? It is perfectly normal and okay to be distracted right now. That's what people do. I would be validating the feeling, not trying to dismiss it or undermine it or make it different. So three strategies, and they always, you know, it depends on which strategy depends on the situation, you know? Obviously, if you're the one sharing your pain, then empathy is probably the next move on my part. I don't want to say, well, guess what I'm going through today? You know, now we're going to one up and see who's had the worst day. And that goes to the strategy of what's going on here. Let's be problem solvers together. And that's where we might share information about what happened. Maybe I ask you, what's going on? Or what do you know so far? You know, what have you tried? And maybe we build on strengths. What did you do? What have you done before? What do you have? You know, Brandon built on your strength and said, your love fills the world. You have something here to bring to this situation. And maybe we look at past successes. How have we dealt with things like this before? What have other people done? You know, how many times are you going through something and you get on the internet and you search the exact thing you're going through to say, what have other people done? You know, and then persistence is about just getting, that's the third skill, is persistence is about, let's get clear about what matters here. What is most important? What are the principles, foundational things that we can't let go of right now that are most important? And so that just has to do with things about boundaries and commitments and making it right when we fall down.
Can I pick up on that persistence thing? Because it's one thing that as we talk about our suffering and our pain, and this was, you know, studying that as I tend to be a good student in certain things, I became so great at suffering that I forgot to feel what it felt to be good for over a year. And so you mentioned the word persistence, so it got in my head of how long do you let someone stay in the suffering or the pain?
Yeah.
Beyond, and that was something one of my best friends who I talked to today, I actually mirrored back some of the advice he gave me years ago, which is to meet someone in transparency and vulnerability. Yeah. And it was an employee issue. But he was the first one to say, nothing happened in your day to make you feel this bad. And I realized that I had just become more comfortable feeling bad. Mm-hmm. That was more my comfort zone. I just was, I was weirdly happier in misery than I was in joy. So what is your suggestion around that, where we can almost get too persistent in staying there?
Well, that's a great question. And that's where, if compassion means we are struggling with, then the question is on the way to where are we going? And we can't just struggle with in one place all the time. And so that's why we've developed these three competencies are called the compassion cycle. How do we actually keep moving towards greater and greater accountability for our own feelings, our own thoughts, and our own behaviors? So compassionate accountability is the cultures that we want to build, not just compassion, because, you know, compassion without accountability gets you nowhere. But accountability without compassion gets you alienated. So you can't have one without the other. They have to coexist. And most people want to do one or the other. So I'll just hear your pain week after week after week and commiserate with you, but I will never ask you to step up and take ownership over your experience and say, what are you going to do next? Or I'm worried about you. This is not what you're made for. Or on the other hand, we can be the dad or the supervisor, the leader that's always bringing the hammer down and trying to teach people lessons, thinking that if they're not afraid of you, they don't respect you. And that seems to be our thing. So you can't have one without the other. And so that's why when we talk about compassionate accountability at every move, at every step, at every moment with people, we are asking for more and inviting them and us to travel to a higher place.
So beautiful and so true, Nate. It's when you go through these different emotions and these different states, I know one thing one of my teachers taught me is to feel the emotion and choose it while you're going through it. This morning, you know, I was obviously pretty bereft yesterday and today, and I just was kind of talking to my inner self and saying, you know, how are you? Are you okay? You know, no, I'm actually really sad right now. I'm really, really, really sad. And so as I went through my day, as I would feel these waves of sadness, rather than making them wrong, pressing them, I choose to feel angry. I choose to feel disconsolate. And allowing yourself to choose the emotion rather than the emotion choosing you was one of the ways that I was able to process in a healthy way. What are your thoughts on that, Nate?
Well, I don't know. I think Brandon has some thoughts on that.
Oh, no. When I snap like that, I just...
I love it.
That's my cheering anytime I hear something amazing. Even in pain.
Oh, that's cool. Cool. We have a symbol in our team that's this. It means I'm with you. I'm with you.
Oh, yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah, yeah.
Cool. I'm going to use that. Jennifer, this.
Yeah.
Because you said choose your emotion there. And I thought that was so powerful, Jennifer. I know we have an expert, but can you compound, talk about, because I was just having this conversation that sometimes the environment you're in is so oppressive. I read something, you can't get healthy in the environment that made you sick. So, you know, it's urged. Right. And if you can, it's Herculean. I love that you said choosing the emotion versus sometimes the environment or situation. We've all been victims of situation this year, obviously with COVID. So either one of you for that kind of.
Nate, I give it to you first.
Yeah. Well, you've really tapped into something important, and it's about our relationship with our feelings, with our thoughts, and with our behaviors. We are 100% responsible for all of those. Whether we want to own it or not, we still are. And once we embrace that I am 100% responsible for my feelings, rather than being tied down, I'm finally free, because I realize I choose it, and I choose what I'm going to do next. And I choose it because I think so often with our feelings, we're taught to somehow blame someone, like, you made me angry, or she really made me sad by doing that. It's like, no, I'm sad because I care. I'm sad because I loved her. I'm sad because I invested so much of myself into this relationship. So my sadness is mine. It belongs to me, and what I do with it belongs to me. And so I think a lot of times when we talk about like some of these mindfulness practices, that's kind of what we're trying to cultivate, is this full ownership and experiencing without judgment our own experiences. But again, that's just feelings. All of the same thing applies to our thoughts as well, and to our behaviors. I think that's what Viktor Frankl, in his famous book, Man's Search for Meaning, the whole thing is, that's the one thing you cannot take away from me, is I choose my feelings. I choose my attitude. I choose what I'm going to do next.
Yeah, the idea of choice is so powerful, Nate. I'm happy you just touched on that idea. I remember when I was first introduced to the concept about 10 years ago, it's like, oh, I choose things. No, we often decide things. Like, we cut off one option for another option. Somebody informed me that the word side is derived from like genocide, pesticide, kill off other options. And how often do we actually choose something the way it is? My friend just died. I could choose that or I could resist it. And it's in the moment that we choose the thing, the job, the boss, the loss, the heartache. And we choose it the way it is, not wishing it were different, just choosing it the way it is, that freedom, power, self-expression arise, because then we're not resisting the thing and we're able to be in the flow of the situation the way it is rather than wishing it were different.
Jennifer, can you expand on, I love that, this idea of acceptance or Nate, of accepting something as is and how that plays into compassion. And again, thinking about that in, obviously in death, but also in our careers, as we evolve up, accepting either a boss is not great, or even accepting in ourselves sometimes, you know, that's a hard time in anyone's career. We talk about the year of the pivot, but one of the things that's very hard is coming to a realization that this career I'm in, this trajectory is just not me, no matter how much I put into it. And that acceptance, or maybe compassion for the latter, and they realize how miserable they are because they're not in their authentic career path. So acceptance, compassion for ourselves can, maybe Nate or Jennifer.
Nate.
Yeah, well, that acceptance, there's lots of different ways we kind of talk about that. At the most basic, maybe when we're in a coaching relationship, we might say, let's focus on what you can control, what you can't. You can't control that life took away a friend. But you can control what you do next. And one of those ways is own my feelings, choose my response, whatever. But it goes much deeper, is to this kind of non-judgmental acceptance. A good friend of mine says that all suffering is from trying to resist what is. And once you just accept what is, then you can start embracing all the things you can do next and what you want to do next with that. And with the compassion cycle framework, we really have identified key choices that we must make in order to keep journeying, going forward in this journey. And one of the ones you talk about, Jennifer, is choosing. When I make a choice, I am also giving up other things. Mm. And at the most basic level, like for me, I eat too much because I don't want to choose something off the menu. So I don't. I just get the buffet or the sampler plate or the appetizer platter, because then I don't have to choose. I don't have to, you know, when I stood at the altar with my wife, I said, I choose you. But I also said, forsaking all others. You can't have one without the other. I choose the Mushu pork, forsaking all the others. And you can't have it both ways, because choices involve loss. Choices involve things you give up. And so my failure to own and embrace the fact of that choice really contributes to my waistline. But it is, you know, it happens in more significant things, like the choices we make about a boss or a promotion or what we're going to do next.
I love that you compare your vows to Mushu pork. By the way, it's my favorite thing all day. And, you know, historically, by the way, when I was younger, same thing. I, you know, if the waiter got to me, my friends just would go, oh God, this is, it's going to be a while. You know, just buckle up. You know, nothing makes me happier. Yeah. I love having a kid because they're my excuse to be like, of course you want the chicken fingers.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and how often do we try to negotiate? And whether we're going through the stages of grief, one of the stages is negotiating. Maybe we can deal our way out of this. But I try to negotiate with my family. It's like, hey, if I get the Mushu pork and you get the sweet and sour chicken and you get this, can I have a bite of all of yours? So now I'm trying to negotiate my way out of really making a choice and owning my own stuff by now trying to suck other people into the drama and to be part of this whole thing so I don't really have to deal with it. So if I have a compassionate accountability partner in my life, they would say, you know what, Nate, no. I know how hard it is for you to make a decision, but it's yours to make. And here's one thing you can count on me. I'm not going to let you try. I'm not going to order something you want so you can have mine, but I will also be there for you when you grieve the loss of the thing you didn't get. So you can count on me to hold you accountable, but also to be your compassion partner.
That is such a powerful partnership that you're describing, Nate. Can you talk to us a little bit about how could we create in a compassionate accountability partnership, whether it's with our peers, with our bosses, with our colleagues? Is there a way to do that in business that allows us all to uplift and be there for one another and empowering each other to be accountable?
There is, and that's our quest. That's been our quest, is how do you actually operationalize and train and teach people to do this in every single interaction? Where there's a method behind what I just role played, what my partner said to me in that moment. There's a very specific method to what happened there, which are the principles of compassionate accountability, which is at every moment we are holding in tension this idea of I'm struggling with you, but I'm not doing your struggle for you. Your struggle is yours, mine is mine, and we're doing this together. Sometimes you're the one that has to do the struggle, and sometimes I'm the one. But as long as we keep crystal clear about that boundary, that I'm not responsible for your feelings, you aren't for mine. The same is true for our behaviors and our thoughts. We teach techniques on how to recognize those boundaries and then speak to that in the moment.
I would imagine in a career, that is such an important skill set for a leader, to manage a team and allow their team, and as obviously, I mean, I think about it as a parent, but I also think in my executive coaching work that great leaders allow their team to suffer a little bit, right? Because a lot of leaders just go, I don't want you to suffer, I'm here, fix everything. And then they can't figure out when they're out of the office, why nothing gets done.
So the number one mistake thing, everyone, the Peter principle is we promote people to their level of incompetence. Well, how does that actually happen? Is we promote leaders who are good doers, good problem solvers. They take initiative. They see a problem, they go solve it. So we're like, oh man, this is great. So we're going to put you in charge of all the others. Well, what they don't do is they don't make the transition from being capable to building capability. So they think that their job is to have the answers. They think their job is to show everyone how to do it. They think their job is to make sure nothing falls through the cracks, because it all comes back on them. And so they fall into this trap of, well, I'll just show you, or I'll just do it for you because I don't have time to teach you now, or I don't want it to fail and then I'll look bad. And so they don't invest in capability. And by doing that, but they've completely fallen down on the boundaries of who's responsible for what. It's like, my job before I was a leader was to get stuff done. Now my job is to help you become capable to get stuff done. That's my only job. And so that's really about where we teach people how to get crystal clear about that boundary. So how do we talk to people? How do we deal those situations where they want us to rescue us? And they're like, I can't figure this out. You know what? You did a million 50 times. What's the answer? And it's seductive. You know, we get pulled into wanting to be the hero. And then we find out that now they're all dependent on us. And then they're resentful when we're not there for them. And we've dug our own hole.
So brilliant, Nate. We can talk to you for hours. I know that you're going to be joining me actually on another show that will be airing, I think, on December 24th on AwakeTVNetwork.live. So for those of you who are interested in hearing more of what Nate has to say, I would definitely recommend that you tune in for that date as well. And we'll continue to expound on this amazing conversation that Nate has already begun here. So Nate, I know you have the book out. Can you tell people the name of the book and where people can go to find out information about you?
Thank you. Actually, there's two books that speak to what we talked about today. My second book, Conflict Without Casualties, is all about the principles and practice of compassionate accountability for leaders. So it goes into how to do this whole thing. And then my most recent book is called Seeing People Through, and it's about leveraging personality diversity and how do we meet people where they're at. How do we close that knowing-doing gap between different personalities? How do we talk to people? How do we be there with them? And you can, wherever books are sold, Seeing People Through and Conflict Without Casualties are both available from Amazon and other places. So appreciate the opportunity to share about that as well.
Thank you so much, Nate. We'll have to have you on this show again sometime in 2021 to talk more about Seeing People Through. I know, if I remember correctly, you said that your personality profiling program is used by Pixar, right?
Yeah, Pixar has in-house trainers that use this model for designing characters, and it was actually validated at NASA. I didn't invent it, but we are one of a couple distributors in the United States, and it's just really, really powerful at getting down behind the scenes about what's going on with people.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much. Nate Ruggiero has been here with us, incredible human being with Next Element. And, you know, just wishing you a happy, happy holiday, Nate, and looking forward to our next conversation as we further this discussion on how can we be compassionate? How can We learn to have accountability and at the same time be compassionate in a way that empowers each and every one of us. So it's been a pleasure having you here with us today.
Thank you so much, Nate, sincerely, for sharing this.
You're so welcome. And Jennifer, our thoughts and prayers will be thinking of you during this holiday season. It's extra hard to have a loss when we should be celebrating. So
thank you so much, Nate. I really appreciate it. So wishing a wonderful rest of your day. And Brandon, back to you, my friend. I hand it over to you to share your closing thoughts.
Yeah, I mean, Nate was amazing. And I think one of my closing thoughts, there's a few things that come to mind. It's funny, one thing I want to just point out, because I'm wearing a Superman t-shirt and I have my Superman sign behind me. And we always think the Superman is a hero, a superhero, because he's this most powerful person in the world, but he's actually a superhero because of Clark Kent, that he studied humanity. And in studying humanity, he became incredible. And I loved what Nate talked about, where if you just save someone all the time, they actually resent you. So it's that empowering part of humanity that we know that we need to solve. So I just think I'm a nerd for that. But the day, I always saw myself as Clark Kent, never Superman. And I realized that within each of us is a superhero and a human. And the more we meet those two, and the most important thing is that when we're not super, we have compassion for that part of ourself that is truly human and join ourselves with others. So thanks for letting my inner nerd to come out. I appreciate it. Okay. Join and allow for the suffering. That's number one. Where are you going together? I love that kind of concept. Jennifer, you are not alone, my friend. You have an army of compassionate people who love you because of your compassion that you've shown so many of us, myself included. Compassion without accountability, you get nowhere. Accountability without compassion, you get alienation. You can choose the emotion. You cannot choose the situation. Compassionate accountability partner, may we all find them. My dear friend, I hope I am one for you. You have certainly been one for me. I know in this person that you lost recently, you were probably one for them. You play that role so often. And I wish all of us more compassionate accountability partners. And I encourage everyone to read Nate's books. One of my fundamental principles in life is meet people where they're at and help people become more of who they are meant to be. So I know Nate does that, and I certainly aligns with my and your approach, Jennifer, of what true humanity works. I like that when you said. And it's about
conflict without casualties.
I dig that. Those are good titles. You're good. Yeah. So that's it. Jennifer, I'm going to leave it to you on final words, my dear friend.
You know, it's hard. Rarely do I ever find myself speechless. And that's why today, you know, words have been, rather than being a paintbrush, which they normally are for me to create the world that I want, I feel like they're kind of crumbling as they fall out of my mouth today. You know, the words just don't seem to feel right, because I think how I'm feeling is it's not something that you can easily express to people when you're feeling sad. Yeah, you can scream, you can cry. I don't think it would go over well on podcast or radio format. And I've done enough of that today, you know, but I just want to acknowledge everybody out there, you know, no matter who you are, no matter what you're going through, know that there are other people out there. You're not alone. We're all doing the best that we can, the best damn job that we can. And I know that right now, wherever you are, no matter when you're listening to this, you're doing the best you can. And acknowledge yourself. If nobody else thanks you, I'm so grateful to have friends like Brandon and Nate, you know, here and be able to receive their acknowledgement. Acknowledge yourself. One of my favorite practices that I do every night before bed, so I look at how could I have lived today better? And I look at, was I compassionate towards myself, towards others? Were there things I could have said or done differently or perceived things differently? But my favorite part of this exercise is then I say, what am I proud of myself for? Did I go on today? I was tempted not to go on. I was tempted just to throw it over to you, Brandon, and say, you know what, Brandon? Can't do it. Like I've cried too much today. I can't do it. But you know, when I put the list together for tonight, I'm going to acknowledge myself that, you know what, I was able to come together and I was able to give it the best I could, even though it might've been a little messy. I was able to give it the best I could. And somebody else might not ever acknowledge you, but you can acknowledge yourself every day for what you're proud of yourself for. Those victory moments that other people might not ever realize were a moment of victory of your human spirit. So I acknowledge you for all those moments that nobody's ever acknowledged you for before, for your courage, and your ability to get up and to get out of bed today, no matter what confronted you. So thank you for being here with us on LA Talk Radio on Get Yourself the Job, and wishing you the strength and courage that you need to get through your next day. Thank you.
You're listening to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill and Brandon Maslin, only on LA Talk Radio.